Welcome to 1514, a podcast of the Biblical Counseling Coalition, where we draw from the words of Romans 15:14 to encourage all Christians that they are full of goodness, filled with all knowledge, and able to counsel one another. I'm your host and director of the Biblical Counseling Coalition, Curtis Solomon. Welcome back to 1514. It's a pleasure to have you with us today. My name is Curtis Solomon. I'm the director of the Biblical Counseling Coalition. It's my pleasure to host this podcast and video blog. Today, I have a special guest with me from the West Coast. Her name is Ellen Castillo. She is the executive director of Word of Hope Ministries in Santa Maria, California. She's a certified counselor with the International Association of Biblical Counselors. She's also the author of a biblical mentor training course for women called Life on Life, Applying the One Another's of Scripture. And Ellen is a council board member with us here at the Biblical Counseling Coalition. So Ellen, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So Ellen, could you just start by introducing us to yourself and your ministry?
Sure. Well, I'm married to Ray. It'll be 39 years this August, and we have six kids, all adults now, scattered all over the country, and have just one left living at home, a 19-year-old. And so far, we have eight grandchildren, also scattered all over the country. And like you said, I am a biblical counselor certified with the IABC and also director and founder of Word of Hope Ministries. I've been doing biblical counseling for about 13 to 14 years. And functioning right now, Word of Hope is a parachurch, 501c3 nonprofit, and we serve locally here, local churches here on the Central Coast, but also do have some online ministry as well. So we offer counseling and biblical counselor training. And right now, I'm the only certified counselor in the ministry. But I do have a trainee who is about halfway through her required counseling hours to become certified. So I expect that will happen within the coming months. And then there will be two of us. And that is a major treat for someone who's been solo like I have all these years. So I'm excited about that. And so as I said, we are a training center for the IABC. And so I do classes locally, inviting other churches in, all kinds of churches. And there's also a way you can do that distance training with me. I've got some people scattered around the country right now working with me on their IABC training, and that's a lot of fun. So we counsel primarily women and teenagers. Occasionally couples, depending on their circumstances, but I'm very limited in that because I don't have a male counterpart in my ministry as of yet. There's possibilities that may be happening in the near future. I'm hopeful. I've been praying for that at least for 10 years. And so I'm anxious to get to be able to do more marriage counseling and couples counseling and then counseling for men. So, but one of the things I love the most personally is counseling teen girls and the younger women. And I spend a fair amount of my counseling hours doing that. And you mentioned the course that I wrote on, I call it biblical mentoring. And that is something that we offer that's kind of different than maybe other counseling ministries, but it's actually full of biblical counseling concepts. I just don't necessarily call it that. I wanted to reach a broader audience of women, and a lot of women aren't going to come to a biblical counseling class, but they want to hear about mentoring and they want to hear about their call as Titus to women. And so that's been a really big part of my ministry in the last few years. I teach ladies how to think biblically, how to apply the gospel to life struggles, and just go deeper than what a lot of the mentoring programs you see out there on the women's ministry market offer. And so I hope to eventually polish that up, make it more professional looking. It's very, I just did it by myself a few years ago, and it's self-published and self-recorded. And so I have a need and a desire to work on that and fine-tune it some more and maybe reach more people with that course. So that's pretty much sums up what things look like here at Word of Hope.
Yeah, it's quite a variety of things going on. I know it takes a lot of time to do any one of those things, let alone all of them. So thanks for doing those. And yeah, it's interesting, just a side note, that the word counseling can sometimes carry a lot of baggage with it and turn people off in a different way. But mentoring is a pretty popular thing. I don't think counseling has the same baggage it used to, but the way we can wisely put ourselves out there can draw in different people. So tell us a little bit about how you got into biblical counseling and what led you to start Word of Hope.
Okay. Well, I learned about biblical counseling through a friend that had been connected to a biblical counseling ministry called Healing Hearts. And I went through one of their Bible studies, and it radically changed my thinking and my heart. And in the course of that, she encouraged me to pursue leadership training with them, and which I did. And I served with them for about a year. But I came out of that feeling like I wanted to do more. I wanted to walk with women one-on-one, where their approach was more of group studies. And I just explored biblical counseling and landed with the IABC. And it just felt like what I was born to do. And I took my training, and I've never turned back. So that's been just exciting. It's an exciting journey. So when I finished my training, I thought maybe I would come alongside one woman in my church every now and then and be able to encourage her and give her some biblical hope and help. And it started with one, and then she told a friend, and then she told a friend. And I would say within weeks, literally weeks, I was full-time volunteering as a biblical counselor in my church. And it was a small church. But then after some time, others in the community would hear about it, just word of mouth, and ask for counseling. And at that point, my church wasn't going to offer any kind of financial help. So the ministry was actually costing me money, which was fine for about 5 years, but then it wasn't as fine for me. And so I just couldn't sustain it that way. So I pulled it out of the church and began it as a small business, just working by myself for myself on my own. And a few years into that, was convinced to turn it into a nonprofit. And I was pretty fearful of that because I don't know how to do that. I do now, but I didn't then. And it sounded very daunting, and I wasn't convinced I could raise a board of directors or pull enough friends together for that. But God blessed me with five people right away who said yes. And so off we went, and that is how we continue to function now. So when I say we, it's me and my board of directors, my new counselor, and myself. And because of being a nonprofit now, parachurch, and finding out I could become an IABC training center, which I did, I think it's been 3 years ago, I'm envisioning and hoping to grow a team here in my area, in this valley where I live, where biblical counseling is not the norm. In fact, it's other than this ministry right now, it's fairly non-existent. And I have high hopes that over time, God will expand it. I've been working on that for, like I said, almost 14 years. So it's a slow, steady crawl, but there has been progress, and I am always hopeful. So I persevere. There's such a need. Of course there is, and it's way too much for one woman. So I needed to multiply myself, and that was the main deciding factor in growing into a nonprofit and taking all of the craziness on that comes with that, and challenges and blessings all at the same time. So just this week, I was able to sign the lease for a new office space. I'm sitting here in my current office. It's one room, and that's not very functional when you're intending to add more counselors eventually. So one came up right down the street, and I grabbed it, and gives us a little room to grow into. So I'm super excited about that. So there's always so much to be thankful for.
Yeah, that's fantastic. It's a really a good testimony to just persevering and hanging in there. So often, especially in our culture, if it doesn't happen quick, if it doesn't happen now, people don't have the patience for it. But your testimony of 14 years, and you look at scripture at some of the things God called people to do, and it was years and years and years of work without any fruit to show, sometimes ever. But oftentimes for a long, long period. So that's a good testimony of that. A couple of things I wanted to talk to you about. You mentioned there, we were just until recently with our move to Louisville, Kentucky, we're just an hour north of you. But other than that, the central coast of California, and for those who aren't familiar with that area, that's kind of, the center of the coast, halfway between San Francisco and Los Angeles. And we were just an hour north of you, but other than our church and your ministry, and then the churches that were getting trained up at our church and through your ministry, biblical counseling was not very prevalent. Praise the Lord that it is growing, and it's exciting to hear that your ministry is expanding in Santa Maria as well. But that's also a common theme for many of the people who read our blog at the BCC, listen to this podcast. We hear from time to time people who are saying, oh, it's so great to feel a little bit more connected with biblical counselors because I feel like I'm on an island by myself floating out in the ocean with very few other biblical counselors around. So Ellen, talk about that experience a little bit for you. What's that been like? How have you sought encouragement and camaraderie in when you're kind of on your own for a long time?
Okay. Well, it has been, I would say, my biggest difficulty through the years is that sense of being a lone ranger and then people even not necessarily really getting it regarding biblical counseling and feeling like I'm always defining it and defending it. And I would say that that's improved over the years though. And so what I purpose to do is just to keep a good working relationship with my pastors. That gives me the sense of having local colleagues. And I do see them that way as far as counseling goes. And that's been a good blessing. And so I make sure I'm in a church that avails itself to me in that way. And I ask for accountability and a sort of a sense of partnership, even though they're not they're not covering my ministry formally, but as my pastors, they cover me, and that's been really good. But it still gets lonely at times. I can't lie about that. But now that I've been training people and I've just brought in another woman to help me with some of the counseling, it's less and less lonely in those ways. And, that's after all these years of hanging in there and just, envisioning what it could be and then seeing God gradually bring it to fruition. So, I would say probably if even maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I was much more lonely than I am now. And also just, connecting with, colleagues around the country and world really now. And, being on the BCC Council Board has meant everything to me, giving me that sense of camaraderie and also people to call on. Sometimes I've been counseling a long time, but sometimes you just need another perspective or you get stuck with something you just haven't dealt with before. And I feel like I have access to amazing people in that way, and I've become good friends with several of them. And so thank goodness for the internet that we know each other from various parts of the world now and have that camaraderie. That didn't exist some years back, and it would have been a lot more lonely that way for me. So
that's a good word. Just the taking advantage of the networking and relationship building opportunities that we can have. I mean, this right now, what we're doing is an example of that. We're talking semi face to face from across the country, from California to Kentucky. So, utilizing that, were there other things, conferences you'd attend, groups you'd be a part of? This, obviously you mentioned the BCC, and we're thankful to have you on the council board. And obviously that's been a blessing both ways to develop relationships there. Anything else you would do or ways you would network with other biblical counselors?
Yeah. With the IABC, there used to be regional conferences not too far from here, a couple hours from here, and I would go to those whenever that was available and meet at least other California biblical counselors, even if they weren't quite local to me. But they have their annual conference in the Denver area coming up in just a few weeks, and I've been going to that yearly and presenting workshops there. And just I think it's important just to stay on top of what's new and current and kind of what people are teaching out there in biblical counseling. And I like to go at least to one or two a year so that I am face to face with other counselors. And although you can, you know, these days you can buy the audio recordings and you can hear an entire ACBC conference of 70 hours just sitting at home in your computer. And that's great, but that is not the same as just the benefit of rubbing shoulders in person with other people who do what you do and think like you think. So I strive to attend those things. It's not always possible. Travel's not easy and it's expensive and all of that. But for counselors who can do that, I think it's a must. So.
Yeah. So those are good words for people who find themselves in that isolated position to really go to conferences, reach out to people. I was just talking to a guy who just emailed Richard Gans and said, "Hey, I have a similar, maybe kind of a similar background, came out of psychology and biblical counseling. Can you call me?" And Richard Gans just picked up the phone and called him. So not saying that's going to happen with everybody, but just take advantage of those things, you know, reach out to people and be at conferences. You mentioned another thing I wanted to talk to you about was the relationship of the church. You mentioned that the Word of Hope is a parachurch organization and that you're tied to a church, you're involved in a church, but the church isn't funding the ministry. Share a little bit about your experience and maybe some wisdom for people who want to do biblical counseling, but just aren't maybe getting the full support that they would like to get from their church.
Yeah, it's tough. That's a tough thing. And I have experienced variations of, you know, types of support through the years. And I do want to say that currently my church I've been in for a year and a half is very supportive. It's been a great blessing. And, you know, I came to that church having already kind of been known there because that church always was the number one referral place to biblical counseling with me. So I already had that rapport with the pastors and knew that they were on board with biblical counseling. So it's been a good fit. They're supportive not just of the ministry, but of me personally. And I think that's most important. Being a woman in ministry is not necessarily what they see every day, especially with a parachurch like this. And then also being biblical counseling that hasn't been popular in this area. So I came to them and I said, you know, I realize I come with some baggage and I'm kind of unique and I don't want to be a pain to you. I want to be a blessing to you and serve you, but I do have unique shepherding needs. And these guys were all on board with that and have been nothing but kind and gracious. So I'm very glad, but I haven't always had it that way. And, you know, I just pressed on anyway. And, so I think it's important as a parachurch to realize that we don't have to be cookie cutter organizations and that everybody's is going to look different. I had to realize that right out the gate that I got a lot of input from people like Julie Ganschau, who's got a really successful ministry in Kansas City. And we are very like-minded and she helped me along in you know, getting the courage to even pursue the nonprofit status. But our ministries look different. There's different places where we're focusing, and that's fine. And church covering looks a little different and all of those things. And I've learned that it's okay. It's okay that there's no like one set of rules to follow if you're going to be a parachurch. But there are some really good, wise people out there doing it who helped me to see the big picture and make sure I was doing things very carefully. And so business-wise, you know, as a nonprofit, you're a business doing ministry as your service. So it's different than anything else. And it does get blurry sometimes in the church. It gets confusing sometimes. And I try to keep it as simple as I can. So one thing I do is I don't charge our fees for the people in my own church. I have my church, and that's just by my choice. I didn't like the awkward dynamic of people in church owing me money or not coming because they couldn't afford it, even though we would never turn them away. Mm. We never turn anyone away for money ever, but they don't necessarily feel comfortable with that. It's just too awkward. So that's something that we do that has kept a warmer rapport between me and the church, I think. And, you know, trying to just serve in the church other than being the biblical counselor, but also involving myself in women's Bible studies, speaking at a women's event, things like that has been, I think, good for the church and really good for me. So those are just some things that I do to kind of deal with the tension of the how do you function as a parachurch, but you go to a church and yet they don't cover you necessarily, but I do consider them as my covering because of the pastoral care I get. So it's confusing, and it's something that each ministry will need to sort out on their own, and I'm still figuring some things out, but I'm feeling pretty comfortable with where we're at right now as far as all that goes. Yeah.
Yeah. That gives some people, I think some good ideas. One, don't try to do it on your own. Reach out. There are other people who have done this kind of thing in the past. They've gone out and started a nonprofit on their own. Be involved with the church and it's going to be difficult to navigate those ministry versus organization lines, but navigate them. You can do it. Those are good words. And yeah, and it legally, you have to, each state's going to be different. I started a nonprofit in California as well, tied to my dissertation research, and the federal government has different guidelines and each state's going to have different guidelines. So, you know, be sure to be specific. If you're reaching out to somebody and you want to start a nonprofit organization, make sure they're familiar with your state laws and do some investigating. It can be a challenge, but I think the other testimony that you shared there is just sticking with your convictions. If you're convicted, you have the conviction this is the right thing to do, whether you're getting backing from a church or not, do it, because that's what God's called you to do. So thanks for sharing that. We're running out on time. When I sent you a bunch of questions, there were a number of things I wanted to ask you about because of your background and different experiences and different conversations we've had. One of them was just you mentioned your involvement with teenagers, and in particular teenage girls. And I've really been blessed by the writing that you've done for the BCC. You've written for our blog a number of times, and you have some great blogs on there about your work with teenage girls, and in particular using creativity and other things like that in your counseling. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Well, first of all, I love counseling teenagers. If I had to pick one thing I do out of the many things I do, that would be it. I just find it challenging and rewarding and fun. I love the teens that come here. So, I do use a lot of creative things in the counseling. First of all, realizing that counseling a teen doesn't have to look exactly like a counseling session might with an adult in a more formal sense. They don't often respond as well to that. So I try to keep it very comfortable, more casual, it can take weeks just to develop trust and a rapport, and I'm fine with that. Many times I don't even find that they're open to praying or opening their Bible in the first few sessions. So I respect that, and I just don't push that. I just sort of enter into their world and get to know them. And one of the ways I do that is through creative activities. And I think that that comes from my background. I was an occupational therapist, and I worked in psychiatric hospitals for a number of years. And our job was to teach living skills to psychiatric patients, but I worked with teenagers quite a lot of that time, and children as well. And so we brought creative activities into all of our therapy groups, and it's just ingrained in me, even though it was many years ago. And I find some good benefit to using art or creative writing or journaling, things like that, with the teens in the counseling session, and even as homework sometimes. So a lot of times where they don't want to verbally tell you what's really going on or go too deep, they're often quite willing to go home and write a short story and interject some of their own thinking into it, and then bring it back to me and let me read it. It's a lot less threatening for them sometimes to show me their journal than it is for them to verbalize some things. So I find it really helpful. And even artwork can be, it can be all kinds of things. It can be a way to make them more comfortable in the session so that they're not having to lock eyes with you and feel intimidated. I find that a lot of girls struggle with that. So I just give them something, you know, we talk about the heart, and so they're drawing and coloring a heart. So in and of itself, it's not really counseling, but it's a vehicle to get them to feel comfortable with me. And then other times they bring me artwork, some of the more creative kids, and you can end up seeing things in the pictures you want to ask them about, and it can open up some pretty neat discussions. So it doesn't work with every teen, but when it does, I really love to do that and be creative in my counseling and try not to have it look like some kind of formal session that they're not going to respond well to. So
I did the last few years I was working with a lot of youth and did a number of counseling cases with youth. And I had one in particular, literally for a few sessions, the kid kept his head on the table. Yes. You talked about that, just maybe intimidation, uncomfortableness, whatever, just the difficulty of looking you in the eye and talking to you. Yes. And yeah, it can take time. I always have two things of silly putty in my drawer in case somebody just is kind of fidgety or just needs something to do. It can be just easing a little bit, making them comfortable in there. Yeah, I appreciated you. I think you wrote one blog particularly about using art in counsel. Could you share maybe an anonymous case study or example of something? I know you talked about the hearts and that, but maybe one particular case that stands out to you that was particularly interesting or helpful and how that worked?
Yeah, I remember a couple years ago, a girl who was probably, I think at the time she would have been 14, and she had been abused, molested, and had a very hard time talking about that. And she also was quite an artist. I mean, amazingly talented artist. So I just asked her to always bring in her current work, and she'd come in with a stack of, you know, sketchbooks full of things. And one picture caught my eye. It was a lot of mountains and hills and a teeny tiny house tucked away in the middle. And I just asked her, you know, how come the house looks so lonely there? And she said, well, that's my picture of my goals for my future. And I said, well, what do you mean? And she said, well, I'm lonely, and I'm always going to be lonely. So I'm just going to build a cabin out in the wilderness, and that's how I want to live the rest of my life. Well, you can imagine the conversations you can have after that. That revealed so much to me about her circumstances as well as her heart. And it really opened the door to talking about just how much God loves her and how much she didn't believe that at that time. And, yeah, it was just a vehicle God used to bring to the table some things we could actually really dig into in counseling, where when I was just trying to talk with her, she was not going to go there with me. but her artwork definitely did. So it's fascinating. It really can be a neat way to sort of break into somebody's heart and see what's going on.
Well, praise the Lord. Thanks for sharing that. That's encouraging. Well, I do reserve the last 2 minutes of our time together for a little segment I call 2 Minute Favorites. So I'm just going to fire questions or an item at you, and you just tell me your favorite, and we've got 2 minutes to go. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right. Starting the timer now. What is your favorite food?
All things Mexican.
All things Mexican. What's the favorite gift you've ever received?
It would be my Bible software that a counselee gifted me years back. Very nice. I use it every day.
Oh, that's fantastic. What's a favorite gift you've ever given?
I think a time when we chose to forgive a debt one of our older kids owed us. We just decided to give grace.
What's your favorite word?
Grace.
Favorite book of the Bible?
Ephesians, right now.
Yeah, right now. Yeah. Favorite non-biblical book?
I would say Because He Loves Me by Elise Fitzpatrick.
Favorite color?
Red.
Favorite sport?
No sports.
No sports. All right. Yeah. I'll skip favorite sports team then. Favorite... favorite quote?
Always respond to every impulse to pray. That's Martin Lloyd Jones. Always respond to every impulse to pray.
What's your favorite animal?
My dog.
What's the favorite job you've ever had, excluding the one you currently have?
Well, back when I worked as an occupational therapist, I worked with chronic schizophrenics for a while who came for a day program. It kept them off the streets way back in the early 80s. I love that job.
All right. If you had any superpower you could choose, what superpower would you choose?
A common one. It would be to be able to go without sleep and get everything done on my to-do list.
That would be a superpower. What's your favorite candy?
Hot tamales.
Hot tamales. All right. Well, that is the end of our time together. Hopefully, my secret ambition is that somebody will send you hot tamales. Well, Ellen, thanks so much for talking with us today. I appreciate it, and I look forward to catching up with you again in the future.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of 1514. If you'd like to know more about the Biblical Counseling Coalition, please visit our website at biblicalcc.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at BiblicalCC or find us on Facebook, facebook.com/Biblical Counseling Coalition. Thanks again for listening.